Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Good to have you along. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Neil Stavem. And as we say, real conversations about how we connect faith to life every day. You know, if you have teens in your house, or maybe you're just kind of hooked on social media as well, it may not be real conversations, Ted. It's just there's a lot of back and forth.
Yeah, there's a lot of news stories out now, too. I just saw one about how Apple shareholders are asking the company to come up with an app to help limit use of teens, you know, using the phones and stuff, because they say a parent shouldn't be on their own with this. It's a tough thing.
Well, we're going to talk about it today and welcome back a guest who we've had on. In fact, we touched on this here, I think, several months ago. We just didn't get through all the questions and... In fact, our guest has written his latest book called, subtitles, 21 Tips to Wise Posting in an Insecure World. I don't think we got through 21, so we're going to do our best to get through a few more as we talk with Jonathan McKee. Jonathan's author of over 20 books, and as we mentioned, the one we're talking about today, The Teen's Guide to Social Media and Mobile Devices. And he's also written, If I Had a Parenting Do-Over, and, of course, Amazon bestseller, The Guy's Guide to God, Girls and the Phone in Your Pocket. And Jonathan travels around the country and writes extensively and really gets great help for parents of all ages in this whole area. In fact, you can check out his website, thesourceforparents.com. That's the number four, thesourceforparents.com. Jonathan, great to have you back on Connecting Faith.
Hey, so glad to be here.
Well, I'm thinking that there's probably a few of moms and dads that provided some sort of electronic device or two for their kids for Christmas, and now they're going, all right, what did we do?
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, I mean, today I just opened up my Twitter feed and was already reading articles about young people addicted to their devices. You know, I mean, in the last couple months, I mean, it's so hard to not read about just devices overtaking the world. As a matter of fact, if you look, you probably even saw today that it's the 11-year mark. 11 years ago, Steve Jobs stood up on that stage and announced the first iPhone. So, I mean, it's crazy when you look at the perspective on this. We're talking 11 years ago, there weren't a lot of smartphones. Those that were weren't very smart. And he made an announcement, and it was funny because when he announced, he said, we've got an invention here that is going to change the world. And his words really proved to be prophetic, because within 5 years, we crossed the 50% mark here in the United States. We're talking 2012, that now over 50% of people had smartphones in their pockets. As we sit here right now, going on 2018, with all the Christmas gifts that young people got and stuff, the average age that a young person gets a smartphone is 10.3 years old, which is really kind of interesting, because you can't even be on the social media sites that they want to be on, the Snapchat, the Insta, all that stuff. You have to be 13 years old, according to COPPA, the Child Online Privacy Protection Act. But yet at the same point, we're giving kids phones young, and a lot of people are sitting around scratching their heads and saying, is this a good idea? So I'm glad to talk about this today, because we need to start figuring out how we can engage with our kids about being wise with these devices.
We need it. We need some help there. You know, well, since these platforms have been around for a few years, I mean, going back 11 years, are we getting smarter about their use? I mean, are you finding that to be the case as you travel around and interact with parents?
Well, I think people are becoming aware of it, and one thing they're becoming aware of is that maybe it isn't a good thing to be staring at a screen all the time. And screen time is getting more. I was writing about music at the end of the year. If you jump on thesourceforparents.com and look at some of the articles we were writing about music, even music, the amount of time that people were listening to music each day went up, I mean, astronomically, almost 45 minutes per day, just simply because we can carry our music library with us. You know, we can stream everything we want. So it's funny, we're attached to digital screens, to music, all this stuff more now. And a lot of people are scratching their heads and kind of saying, is this a good thing? You know, is this too much? As a matter of fact, Common Sense Media did a survey just a while back where they asked parents and teenagers, hey, are these devices becoming too much? Are we becoming addicted? Of course, 66% of parents said, yeah, I think young people are addicted, which is kind of funny, the parents, you know, pointing their finger at young people. But believe it or not, 52% of teenagers said, yeah, this is getting to be too much. And so it's not that they want to give up their device. Don't get me wrong here. You know, you might as well chop off their arm before they give up their device. But this device they love so much, they're starting to realize that sometimes it's frustrating when they're trying to talk with their friend and their friend is, you know, staring at the screen. So these are the conversations as our kids are getting devices that maybe we don't need to give to them so soon, by the way. But when they get devices and as we keep our eyes on the calendar and realize, hey, they're going to have devices sometime. So as we give it to them, wouldn't it be neat to dialogue with them and talk with them about why is posting in such an insecure world?
Which is probably, you know, a good reminder, too, that your perspective is not one, all right, ban them all, you know, or don't have any guidelines. But you've really thought through this as you've been writing about it for a number of years, right? In fact, lived it out with your kids as well.
So. Well, it's fun, yeah, and with my kids, you know, my youngest is now 20, and so, I mean, she's right in the middle of this, and it's funny for me seeing my kids grow through all these changes, and like this weekend, I'll be talking with a bunch of middle school and high school kids about this, and it's interesting because it's definitely, I mean, it is almost kind of the center point of their world, and I mean, they love all kinds of different activities, but what's the hub of where they connect to go to these activities? This little device they're carrying around in their pocket, So this is the thing we need to talk with them about. And when I do address them, you know, talking with teenagers, we need to be, you know, careful how we address them because, you know, it's so easy for them to dismiss us and say, oh, great, here's some other adult telling me how to live my life. So very often what I try to do is I really try to use the same approach I use when I'm speaking to a kid at like a school assembly when I address them even in this book here is I talk with them about – you know, I like to tell them about these real life stories about what's going on. So, I mean, if I'm talking about Snapchat, I'll tell them the history of Snapchat and I'll tell them a little bit about how it came to be. And we'll talk about some of the, you know, I'll talk about the Snap Maps, this new feature they have, and ask them some questions about like, hey, so who can see you on your Snap Maps? And it's interesting because when I share some of these stories and I'll share stories of stalkers, like the creepy guy I talk about in Chapter 2, who used the location information of young girls' posted pics to break into their houses and steal their underwear, literally. I can't make this stuff up, all right? And so this guy, the creepy underwear guy, as the cops call them, when I tell the story there, it's funny. I don't have to tell, you know, girls, hey, look at your privacy settings and see who can look at your pics. I just tell them that story, and I can literally see girls around the room pulling out their phones and going, wait, did I post my location? Did I wait? You know, they start looking because as they start hearing these real life stories of stuff going on, and just tell them basically to think about some of these things because these are things we need to think about.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe that's a place we have to just start because it's so important. I mean, I know you address it. We click agree in all those forms and requirements and all that. But the privacy part of it, I mean, that's kind of ground rule number one, isn't it?
Yeah, and this is hard because a lot of parents, I feel for them, they feel like, man, my kids know these devices better than I do. And, you know, and we're not calling for parents to be, you know, to go get a PhD in the smartphone because the second they get the degree, it'll be out of date. But what we are trying to get parents to do is to be able to, if their kids come up and say, hey, can I get this app? You know, can, you know, the common, you know, question for the kid first getting, hey, mom, I want Snapchat. Can I get it? And if you honestly don't know, it's okay. Just say, I don't know. Let's figure it out together. And for them to go and get on a computer and Google, and they'll probably end up finding some of maybe our articles on thesourceforparents.com or Common Sense Media constantly having some good information about, hey, here's some good stuff to know about this app, and to start having those conversations. And when it comes to something like privacy settings, it would be good as parents learn this stuff, you know, because if let's, for example, a kid wants Instagram, you know, if they want to get Instagram, if they Google Instagram safety or Instagram parenting concerns, what they'll find out is that Instagram could be a very innocent, you know, app. But the things that we as parents need to know is, one, who can see these pictures that our kids are posting, and two, how private are is this? In other words, if a kid posts, let's use a situation that's a common one. Let's say I've got a 20-year-old daughter. Let's say our 16-year-old, 18-year-old, 20-year-old daughter is at coffee studying one night, and she decides to post a picture of her coffee cup that she just drew on, you know, and she's like, late night study session, about to call it quits, you know, some normal post that we might see from a young girl. And as she posts that, the question we have to ask ourselves is, who can see that post? Did she post the location of where she is, that she's about to, alone, walk out into a dark parking lot to that car parked next to the panel van? Okay, let's not become extremists. But, you know, I mean, but you know, as we start to think about this stuff, it's good to know. So talking with our kids about, for example, who's a friend is an important one, because have they met every single one of those friends face-to-face? You know, they met a kid that seems like they're at a school across, you know, at a campus just across town. Is it really a kid from a campus across town? How do we know that? We saw their picture. How do we know it's not that 45-year-old pedophile sitting in their mom's basement who does this all the time? And I promise you, you know, I walk into schools and constantly the principal is doing triage from some catastrophe that happened because a picture is being passed around, or someone who was talking with someone that they thought was different than who they were really talking with. And police departments have entire departments dedicated to this stuff, because this stuff happens all the time, and young people need to start thinking about this. So this is some of the stuff I talk with them in the Teen's Guide to Social Media, is telling the stories about this. Not to say, hey, your phones are dangerous and be careful, don't ever use them, but to say, hey, be careful who you're connecting with. Have you met these people face-to-face? Be careful what you're posting, you know, and to talk about these things, you know. This is important conversations to have.
Well, we're glad to have the conversation today with Jonathan McKee, who's author of a number of books, including The Teen's Guide to Social Media and Mobile Devices, 21 Tips to Wise Posting in an Insecure World. Jonathan writes, speaks around the globe, but he writes regularly at the website thesourceforparents.com, the number four, thesourceforparents.com. I recommend it to you. In a moment, we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit about one of the challenges with social media, is that nothing you post is temporary. We'll find out what that really means. By the way, you have a question today, and you might be in that category, so I don't really understand this. Jonathan's a great tutor. Love to take your question today, your concerns, at 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. More in a moment. I don't think that song is talking about social media devices. But
everywhere you go, it goes with you.
It's everywhere, right? We're talking about it today with Jonathan McKee. So glad to have him back with us here on Connecting Faith. You can find out more about Jonathan's writing and speaking at his website, thesourceforparents.com. Jonathan has a couple decades worth of youth ministry experience and speaks to parents and leaders worldwide, and has written some 20 books, including The Teen's Guide to Social Media and Mobile Devices. And I neglected to mention a moment ago, we do have 4 copies of that book to give away. So I want to encourage you, this is going to be a great resource, practical, helpful, something you can talk through with your kids. It's an easy way to just have the conversation. 877-933-2484 is the number to sign up for the books. We'll do the drawing at the top of the hour. Jonathan, maybe before we go any further, you know, talk about having the conversation as parents. Ted and I were just talking over the break. You know, it's a little hard maybe if you started out lax or you didn't really have any guidelines, and now you think, well, I gotta rein things in a little bit. Can you put the genie back in the bottle?
Yeah, it is tough. I mean, like we said, we live in a world where the average kid gets a smartphone at 10 years old. And of course, this is tough for some of us who have waited, because, you know, our 13-year-old, our 14-year-old is like, Mom, all my friends have a phone. And they're really not too far from the truth there, because most of them do. It is interesting, though, as you look at some of the experts out there. I mean, Common Sense Media, the CEO of Common Sense Media, who's a, you know, secular organization that the government goes to and asks their, you know, questions about, you know, hey, what do we do with media and stuff? I mean, David, we're pressing him and saying, hey, well, when's the perfect age? When's the perfect age? And he was given a lot of, you know, answers kind of like, well, when kids are showing the maturity and this and that. And finally someone says, when did you let your kids have these devices? And he said, in high school. In high school, when they showed the responsibility. And that's interesting to see that a lot of these guys who research this all the time, they're waiting. They're not just giving their kids, you know, devices at 10 and this kind of stuff. And so when you pick up, you know, advice from the, you know, Journal Pediatrics or from some of these experts, American Academy of Pediatrics, they're saying, hey, don't let your kids have their devices in their bedrooms. The advice I always give to parents is, hey, this is really easy, you know, if your kids right now are 8 and 9 and 10 because you haven't done this yet, you know, it's easy to say, hey, when you get these devices, just so you know, we're going to provide a service for you as mom and dad. We're going to charge your phone at night, you know, and, you know, don't worry. You don't have to worry about charging it. This is a free service we provide. We insist. We would love to do this for you, you know. Where this is tough is what you brought up is, you know, if your 16-year-old, your 17-year-old has had their free reign with their phone and they've had it forever, and all of a sudden you're like, hey, I need your phone at night. That's a tough battle to consider. And the thing I tell the parent of the 17-year-old whose kid is in their last, you know, semester of school and they're about to go off to their college dorm next year is, you know, keep your eye on the calendar. If they're about ready to leave and stuff, you know, in parenting, we've got bonding and we've got boundaries. And bonding is our hanging out with our kids, our conversations with our kids. And it's through bonding time that a lot of these important conversations happen, where values are passed on. Boundaries are, of course, things like, no, you're not going to have your phone in your room, or you can't have it yet, or you're grounded, or whatever boundaries are. We've got to be careful with our 17-year-old who's literally leaving the house in, you know, 5 months or whatever, you know, to not all of a sudden tighten up on those boundaries real quick, because all of a sudden, you know, we don't want to hinder that bonding, because bonding is where a lot of this good stuff happens. And sometimes parents make the mistake of squeezing too tight on the boundaries. And again, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying no boundaries, not at all. But this is one of those things where even in a book I just wrote, If I Had a Parenting Do-Over, I asked hundreds of parents about, you know, if you could just go back and change one thing, you know, one parenting practice, what would you change? The overwhelming category, number one answer by far more than anything else was something about spending time with their kids, the bonding time with their kids. And that's where a lot of parental regret was in this bonding time. So I would say keep that at the forefront and remember to not all of a sudden, you know, smother your 17-year-old so much that they cut all ties, because bonding is such an important part of parenting. But at the same time, man, if I get a 14 or 15-year-old, you know, I think it's okay to say, guess what, you guys, let's talk about this and share some of these articles with them. And you know what? Honestly, people are using this book, The Teen's Guide for Social Media, as kind of the proverbial phone contract. Hey, let's read this together, because it's got discussion questions at the end of each chapter. And when you're done reading this chapter, let's talk about this, and we'll make some decisions on what these rules are going to look like in the house. And then we can ask them, hey, what do you think is fair? What do you think this looks like? And we can start to navigate some of those decisions. But this can be one of those tools where, you know, hopefully when they read the Snapchat chapter, you could talk afterwards and you can decide as a family, well, what do you think? You think this is a good app for us to have?
Good word, and it is a great resource. I recommend it. The Teen's Guide to Social Media and Mobile Devices, 21 Tips to Wise Posting in an Insecure World. You can use it as an opportunity, as you said, maybe as a contract. You read it, you talk about it together, and you set up the guidelines. So one of the things that we want to talk about is, you know, something that we maybe don't, we have a hard time grasping, that, you know, grandma, your boss, and Jesus see what you post, and that nothing you post is temporary. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, you know, it's probably the number one area where young people get into a lot of trouble with their device. I mean, there's all kinds of different stuff, such as, you know, watching Netflix instead of doing homework. But it seems like the area where I see constantly on school campuses when I show up, the principal is usually, the problem he's dealing with is, you know, is a picture that was passed around the entire school. It usually happens like this. Boy asks girl to send him a sexy pic. Girl eventually gives in because she wants him to like her, so she sends a pic. Eventually this guy and girl break up. I mean, this could be a day later, a week later, a year later, it doesn't matter. But the guy decides to send the pic to everybody, and before you know it, the whole campus has it, and this girl can't even walk through the hallways without giggles and laughs and words being thrown at her. And it's so unfair when the way it happens. Now, this happens the other way, too. I was at a Christian school where a young man had been coerced into making this video by some girls that oh, we want to see this. And so he filmed kind of an inappropriate video of himself and sent it to them. They captured this video and passed it around to everybody. I mean, so this stuff happens all the time. And sometimes when it even comes to stuff like Snapchat, you know, Snapchat's this app that a lot of young people use innocently. They just send a fun message with a pic attached to it. But Snapchat, as it started, it presented itself as, hey, don't worry about what you click. You know, don't worry about what you send because it disappears. And, you know, in 2014, the Federal Trade Commission, you know, they actually hand-slapped Snapchat and said, you guys are kind of misrepresenting. You're saying this stuff disappears, and young people are all over the place are buying that, and yet these pictures and these videos are showing up later because they aren't disappearing. And there was a variety of ways, the simplest way being the screenshot, but there was actually software. You could go to the iTunes store at the time and get software that found pics that were in the cache of your phone that, you know, that supposedly had disappeared. So, I mean, even the FTC was like, hey, Snapchat, guys, let's be honest. These pictures don't truly disappear. People can harness these, so stop presenting it as such. So Snapchat made some efforts to try to do this, but this is a problem where we constantly see young people thinking, you know, they jump onto an anonymous site or something and they think they're safe, but yet it's funny, police access, you know, these users all the time in crimes, and people constantly, the statement people make is, wait, I thought this was private. I thought this was anonymous. And you ask any expert out there, and it's something I pound throughout this book, is nothing you post on the internet, nothing you post on these apps is temporary. And don't post anything that you wouldn't want mom, dad, grandma, your teacher, your future boss, Jesus, seeing, because, you know, anything you post, it is out there, and it's important to get young people to start thinking about this and thinking before they click.
Well, in fact, I think the anonymity, that's one of the challenges, right? You talk about, was it ephemeral anonymity? I mean, we like that idea, I guess, don't we? We only have a minute or so before the break, but we can at least touch in on that a bit.
Yeah, and ephemeral anonymity is just a way of saying, you know, it's a fancy way of basically saying, hey, you can be anonymous and this stuff disappears. And most of the sites claiming that stuff don't seem to be quite as anonymous, or their stuff doesn't disappear as much as they, you know, thought it does. And there's people capturing this stuff. And we need to be careful, you know, I don't want to jump to spiritual advice here, but you know what? Here's where my advice differs a little bit. There's a lot of people out there saying, be careful what you record. And the advice I really give throughout this book is, hey, how about be careful how we live our lives? And in 1 Peter 2:15, that's basically what it says, be careful how you live. Imagine if your lives, you know, live your life as if it's being recorded wherever you go. And when you start thinking about this and thinking before, you know, we post a lot of this stuff.
Yeah. All right, we've got a break coming up, and then we're going to continue on the conversation. We do have 4 copies of Jonathan McKee's book to give away, and we would love to get one in your hands and let it be a great resource to help you and your family as you work through some of the issues about social media. It's called The Teen's Guide to Social Media and Mobile Devices, 21 Tips to Wise Posting in an Insecure World. We'll talk more with Jonathan in the moments ahead. You can sign up for a copy of the book at 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. You may have a question as well for Jonathan. You're welcome to join the conversation, or if you want to submit it online, you go to myfaithradio.com and click on the Connecting Faith show page. Use the email link there. Love to have you join the conversation with us as we talk with Jonathan McKee. And you can check out his website, thesourceforparents.com. Jonathan has been a youth ministry expert and speaks around the globe and writes at thesourceforparents.com. There's more coming up. Today we're talking about how we can maybe realign priorities a little bit. So it's not that your smartphone isn't what you need for oxygen, but you keep priorities on the Lord and understand that He is life. We're talking about, you know, just how we deal with the reality of our technical world. Talking the Teen's Guide to Social Media and Mobile Devices, 21 Tips to Wise Posting in an Insecure World with Jonathan McKee, is author of over 20 books, It's written, If I Had a Parenting Do-Over. That was not too long ago. It came out. Bestseller is called The Guy's Guide to God, Girls and the Phone in Your Pocket. And he's talked about issues like this and more for a couple decades in his youth ministry experience traveling around the globe. And we're glad to have him with us today. He writes at the website, thesourceforparents.com, which is just full of great resources, thesourceforparents.com. Jonathan, one of our callers just asked a question about gaming sites, and I know that's certainly something that we probably need to be aware of as well. Our kids are involved in that. Some guidelines there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because, see, you know, it's funny. When it comes to young people talking with other people, they meet online. You know, it's funny. Some people are like, wait a sec. Okay, we got apps. We got online. We got Xbox Live. We've got there's so many different means. And parents will always come up to me and go, what about this app? What about the app Musical.ly? What about the, you know, and there's so many. So that's one thing we do is there's a couple apps we hit by name in this book, ones that are huge like Snapchat, the go-to number one app that every kid wants and has, you know. But what we try to do with this book and when I talk with young people is there's so many hundreds of different venues that young people are using. We try to teach them some general principles like who they're friending and what kind of information they're sharing. So you know, we could talk about 10 different gaming venues here, because gaming venues are the kind where, think about it, a kid, instead of just now playing Pac-Man on a little, you know, TV screen with another kid sitting right next to him in the room anymore, now, you know, they've got these, you know, really intricate controllers where they're on all kinds of different screens, whether a TV screen or their computer screen, and they have the ability to connect online and have somebody in Singapore or Cleveland or, you know, wherever, or even next door playing with them. So this gives them an opportunity to meet people they haven't met face-to-face and engage in conversation. So that brings up, again, more safety issues and more issues where they've got to be wise. As I was writing this book, we get emails at thesourceforparents.com where people can ask us questions, and somebody emailed me directly and says, hey, my kid was playing on one of these gaming sites and using this game speak to talk as they were, you know, navigating through, and was playing with a friend that he met online. And of course, you know, the friend is claiming to be another teenager and they're playing games together, but somehow the conversation started where, you know, the one kid's system wasn't very slow. And so this kid's online friend was like, well, you know, you could get a faster system. And the kid said, well, we don't have a lot of money. And this kid says, oh, well, my dad's in the oil industry and we have plenty of money, and you know, I could send you some money for a new system. Well, of course, this young kid was like, oh, send me a, well, that sounds great, and after all, you're my friend, so there's no danger here. So what's this young kid do? Gives the other kid his address. And so these parents contact me and they go, well, what are we supposed to do? We just found out he, you know, his sister told him and he gave the address. What do you do? I said, well, lock your doors and call the cops. And they're like, you're serious? I said, no, absolutely. And sure enough, when they called the cops were like, oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, they directed them directly to a department that handles this. Why? Because this happens all the time. And they started following it. And as they're pursuing this, a package comes in the mail. I can't make this stuff up. This is the kind of stuff that happens all the time, and you can't even tell where these stories are going to go. Package comes. It's got some gifts and some stuff in it, and it's got literally hundreds of dollars in cash in it. Well, the cops track the package back, and the package is to a trailer park in a certain city, and I won't say what city it was, but you'd sit there and think, lots of oil industry billionaires living in trailer parks, don't you think? So, then they find that a pedophile lived in that trailer park, and, you know, and the stories can go from there, and it's interesting the turns they take, but this is real life stuff that happens all the time. And it's because lots of times moms and dads aren't talking with our kids about, hey, have you met who you're talking with face to face? You know, and what information are you sharing? And it's tough to keep up on this stuff. I mean, it's only been a few months that Snapchat has Snap Maps. Well, Snap Maps, you know, here's one of the most common used, you know, apps by young people, and any kid can go to their Snapchat, and when you pinch the screen, you can, boom, see a map, and you can see where all your friends are on a map. So this all of a sudden brings up new issues now, because now every kid out there has to think about, okay, who am I going to let see this? And if they let all their Snap friends see where they are at any time, that brings up the issue of, have you met every one of these SNAP friends? So again, these are the conversations we need to have, and that's where resources like this, the Teen's Guide to Social Media and Mobile Devices, come in handy, because I've known parents who said, okay, you were in trouble, they took away their phone, they said, read this, and when you're done reading this, you can get your phone back. So it's, you know, whatever you need to do to start having these conversations, to talk about this stuff, because this is real-life safety concerns, real-life wisdom that we need to start thinking about.
Obviously, there's some issues, some big issues of concern, and you talked about some general guidelines. I wonder if we can take a few minutes, Jonathan, if you can just summarize, say, well, here's four or five, you know, basic things, just, you know, for the novice that wants to just make sure they get a good handle on it.
Oh, man, you're asking me to summarize hundreds of pages into a sentence. I love it. That's great. Well, I'd say that the big summary, if we're going to do just one summary of everything, it would be think before you post. I mean, that's the one thing, is think before you post. And I write articles for magazines about this all the time, which is just, you know, before you hit that share button, before you hit that send button, before you hit that submit, before you hit that post button. And it's funny how many young people, by the way, the problem of when they posted that rant or that pic or whatever, very often is late night in their own bedroom. So let me stress to mom and dads, you know, this advice from your family doctor that years ago, back in 2010, before smartphones were there, they were advising, hey, no internet connections or TV in your kids' bedrooms. And a lot of parents took that advice, but all of a sudden, remember, you know, our history here, 2012, we crossed the 50% mark for how many smartphones are in the house now. And you know, some 80-something percent of 12 through 17-year-olds now have smartphones in their pockets. And I know very few parents that make their kids, you know, turn their phone off at night, or better yet, the parents charge it in their bedrooms and say, hey, we'll charge it for you, you know. And I think that's a great practice for moms and dads to start, because kids get in trouble in the middle of the night on these devices. And I mean, I joke with parents at my parent workshop. I say, yeah, and, you know, not only should you charge it in your bedroom at night, you know, charge it by your nightstand, right by your bed, and then crush a light bulb on the floor right next to it, right there. So you can hear the footsteps in the middle of the night of the kid trying, because, I mean, young people love these devices, you know, I joke, but I mean, these are some of the things where we as parents need to not set up our kids for failure. And handing our 11-year-old a smartphone, or forget it, maybe we didn't hand them a smartphone, we handed them an iPad, which has all that same exact stuff, except for the phone part, you know, and saying, oh, here, have this in your bedroom at night. It's not a great idea. And here's where we could start talking with them about it. And the Teen's Guide to Social Media is a tool that will help them start thinking through this. And I even got a big section of advice for parents right in the front of it that kind of goes through parents, you know, goes through some of this stuff with parents and says, hey, use this as a discussion opener with your kids and dialogue about some of this stuff. This is important stuff.
You know, the last two words in the subtitle about 21 Tips to Wise Posting in an Insecure World, say a bit more about that, because obviously we all want to be liked and valued and appreciated, but is that really what's behind so much of the maybe taking risks here, where we don't have the right kind of self-image or an understanding?
Yeah, obviously that word has all kinds of ramifications, insecure on how young people are feeling. We live in a world right now where teen suicide is at an all-time high, unprecedented high, where anxiety is up, teen depression is up. And we write about this on the Source for Parents.com. We have articles about, well, you know, the rise in teen depression and anxiety, and what can we as moms and dads do about this. But it is a very insecure world right now. We you know, when you and I were kids, you know, things were tough on a campus. But when the bell rang at 2:37 or whenever it rang, we got to go home, and many of us, to a safe place until that next morning at 7:38, whenever that bell rang again. But now at 2:37 p.m., young people enter a whole new world where they have to measure up, where they have to be good enough, where they have to be liked, where every post out there is judged, you know, and these comments happen, the cyberbullying happens. So it's a very insecure world out there. And not to mention even the safety issues of, you know, jump on a website and Google pedophiles in my area. And you can look on a map and you could see people that have been busted for misrepresenting themselves in the online world. It's a scary place out there, and it's a place where we need to teach our kids to navigate this, not just take these devices away from them. We need to look at the calendar and say, hey, when they're 18 someday, they're going to be in a college dorm. They're going to be in an army barracks. They're going to be somewhere across the country, and they're probably going to have one of these devices. Have we equipped them for that day? We need to start having these conversations, and here's a tool we can use.
Yeah. Well, I think that's probably, I know that's at the heart of what you've been writing about and speaking about all these years, whether it's social media or anything else. I mean, the fact is that parents need help, maybe just in terms of making the connection with our kids. And it's maybe a little more challenging now than it was a generation ago.
It is tough. And that's one thing when I address kids, like in a book like this or in a school assembly, I really address them about what they have with a parent and with these mentors. I mean, one of these 21 tips is to get a mentor. You know, and I talk about connecting with their parents about this and connecting with mentors and sharing some of these struggles, because that connection, it can be lifelong, you know, mom and child, and that even more so than these little boundaries we put about don't have your phone in your bedroom. That relationship is important. We need to keep that relationship. We need to keep these conversations happening.
You mentioned kind of the outset, I think it was COPPA. That's a government agency? Is that what that is?
Yeah. Federal Trade Commission has this thing called COPPA, which is the Child Online Privacy Protection Act, and it keeps basically young people from sharing data they're not supposed to share. And so they're the ones that if our kid goes to sign up for Instagram or for Snapchat or Facebook or whatever it is, if they put in their age and COPPA will say, oh, you know, sorry, you aren't old enough, or Snapchat will say, sorry, you're not old enough to have Snapchat yet. And that's where their, you know, our kids' friends will be like, oh, you dummy, just lie about your age. Put in that you were born on this year instead. So we've got 11-year-olds lying about their age so they can be on Snapchat, so they can be on Instagram. But there is this COPPA out there that where at least kids do have to enter their age. And parents that are in their kids' lives and parents that are, when they're giving their kids devices, if you are giving your kid an iPad that's 10, you know, if they're 10 years old, have some blocks on there. One of the simple blocks I tell parents to have all the time is a block that before they download an app, that they have to get your password, you know, and no, not your birthday or your anniversary, but that password that your kids actually don't know. So they have to come to you before they get Snapchat, because there's some things moms and dads need to know about Snapchat before they just say yes to that to their 10-year-old.
Oh, there's so much that we could cover, but Jonathan, you've done such a good job for us just giving a little tutorial here early on the new year. We're looking for some help, and find it at thesourceforparents.com and the book from Jonathan McKee, The Teen's Guide to Social Media and Mobile Devices, 21 Tips to Wise Posting in an Insecure World. Check it out. We do have some copies to give away. We'll do a drawing at the top of the hour, so you can sign up for that with a phone call at 877-93-FAITH. And, of course, you can pick up the book on Amazon, and you can find out all about Jonathan's writing and resources at his website, thesourceforparents.com, thesourceforparents.com. Jonathan, blessings to you. Thanks for coming on today.
Oh, great conversation. Thanks so much.
You're listening to Connecting Faith. Here we've got another 10 minutes to go. And coming up, another visit with Rick Mattson just ahead. You're listening to Connecting Faith, and it's time once again to connect with Rick Mattson. Rick is an apologetics specialist for InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, and we get together periodically to talk about how to more effectively share our faith with the friends, neighbors, coworkers, and particularly those who may be skeptical, and I guess that's probably the majority of people. In fact, Rick has written a book called Faith is Like Skydiving and Other Memorable Images for Dialogue with Seekers and Skeptics, and we do want it to be a dialogue. We just sometimes have a hard time knowing how to get started. Rick serves Hamline University in Minnesota as a staffer with InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, but he also travels around the country speaking in the college university campuses. And Rick, you recommend something called a prayer map, so tell us about that.
A prayer map is a tool that we use on college campuses with our InterVarsity students who want to do outreach. They don't always know who to reach out to, however. Sometimes God has put more people in our lives than we first recognize. Mm-hmm. We only see what's right in front of us. And a prayer map is a way for us to, sometimes it's called a network map. You, on a piece of paper, figure out all the different networks that God has placed in your life. And he has put you there for a strategic reason, and that is to be his representative. So if I could just kind of explain how this goes, first thing you do is you put a small circle, that being yourself, in the middle of a piece of paper, and that's the hub. The circle in the middle, that's you, that's the hub. And then you draw spokes out from the circle. And there might be 5, 8, 10 different spokes all around the sheet of paper from the middle out toward the edges. And each one of those then represents a network. So once you get out to the end of a spoke, maybe toward the top of the piece of paper or the sides or the bottom, then you draw another circle and you start listing all the people in that particular network. So it might be your place of employment at your job. And you might list 5 or 10 people there. And now you're starting to think, whoa, I hadn't thought of that person. Yeah, I guess God did put me in their life. Maybe this was arranged. Maybe my life isn't just a big accident. You follow another spoke out, draw a circle around people in your neighborhood, and you list all the people in your neighborhood. And this might take more than one sheet of paper, or write small. And then you think, wow, yeah, I did have that conversation with Julie the other day. It never dawned on me that God maybe arranged for that encounter to happen. Another spoke could be your friends. Another one could be old friends from high school and college or school or whatever. Another one could be if you like to go to the gym. I like to play golf. People like to swim. They're in dance classes and so forth. List the people in there that God may have brought into your life. You have all these networks that you don't really realize, and when you see them on a piece of paper, it's an awakening experience. Like, whoa, I hadn't thought of that. Well, then the next step is after you look through those names, then you start praying over them. And you just say, Lord, who do you want me to reach out to right now? Whose hearts are you preparing that you want me to have kind of the next step, take the next step with that person? So in some cases, take the next step means just going and having coffee or just talking over the backyard fence or going and doing a project together, maybe serving together someplace, raking leaves for somebody else and do it with a friend who's not a believer. Or in my case, oh, okay, let's go have a round of golf together and enjoy time together on the golf course. Or maybe it's time to share the gospel with that person. We've had all these conversations, all these spiritual conversations in the weeks and months preceding. It's time to ask the person, has anyone ever shared a summary of the gospel message with you? And could I do that? So maybe it's time to do that. So as you pray through all the names, just ask the Lord to bring to mind the people that he especially wants you to focus on. And could I just do one more segment on this? Sorry, I'm doing all the talking here, Neil.
No, because I'm writing notes.
No, I want to be the host and interview you sometime. But I think the next step then, or the what's integrated into these steps that I've been talking about, is to have this theology of witness that says this: I'm not the one who's bringing Jesus to them. Jesus is already there. He's already out there in those networks, drawing people to himself. He is working in their lives. My job is to be the detective, to discover, to discern what he's already doing and step into the process that's already occurring. I simply don't have the power to manufacture all of that spiritual change in another person, but I do have the ability to say yes to God. And isn't there that old saying, something about it's not your ability, it's your availability? I always like that saying because it means that I'm relying on God, not my own strength, my own cleverness, let's say. And hey, I'm trained. I'm an evangelist. Sure. But to rely on your training and cleverness and all of that, your own wisdom, that's not going to result in fruit in evangelism. But walking in and saying, oh, that's what God is doing. They have an interest in the arts. Let's go to the art gallery and talk about the worldview of the artist. And maybe there's some paintings there or some other art forms that have been done by Christians, and that might become a topic of conversation. That's what God is doing in that person's life, so I'm going to go there instead of forcing the conversation to someone else. And that's what takes spiritual discernment, takes prayer.
And I think, too, what an important step it is for us to realize that we're here where we are on purpose. We might be in a job that we don't really like, or you know, a neighborhood we don't enjoy or whatever, but right, to actually start writing that out, we can suddenly see a little bigger picture.
Yeah, I'd encourage folks to go to Acts chapter 8 and watch how Philip is moved by God it's very much on purpose. It's very intentional. It's very strategic on the part of the Lord. It's as if the Lord's right hand is with Philip and his left hand is with this eunuch, this person who's interested in God, this God-fearer. And God puts them together on the road. And I forget what road that is anyway.
The road to Joppa.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. The Lord is intentionally putting this encounter together. You know, the Lord could just go himself, could just send an angel, could just snap his fingers, but he uses human messengers, frail as we are, to communicate his truths about reality. I just find that astonishing. He's the senior partner. We're the junior partners. He's called us, but he's called us into work that he's already started. And I just find that very exciting and very much of a relief. The burden is off me to be this perfect evangelist, which I'm not.
I was thinking, too, just as you're describing the prayer map, that it is very likely that as we fill in some names, we may not know the names. We go, well, yeah, I guess I don't actually know more than two of my neighbors, but there are six of them around, or, you know, coworkers, I say hi, but other than his name is Bob, maybe, because it says it on a shirt, or, you know, so so probably the next step is to just start being a little more intentional.
Yeah, be more intentional. I write stuff down, too. Okay. You should see the file I have on you. But I go home and I just write things down because I have a lot of people in my life. I'm a pretty outgoing person. I know a ton of people, but I just cannot keep track of the details of their lives. So I know it sounds a little cold, maybe a little mechanical, but I just write things down. And before I'm going to go see someone, I might glance at that and think, oh, yeah, that's right. One of their relatives is struggling with a health issue, and I agreed to pray for that. I have a little bit. Haven't done it in a while. Okay, I'm going to pray on the way over there, and I'm going to care for this person in a way that gets down into the particulars of their life. And one of those particulars is to know their name.
Is there a prayer that you keep coming back to maybe time and time again, just to get started and say, does it, Lord, use me, or should we be more specific?
Lord, what are you doing in this person's life? Lord, I'm an observer today. I'm going to go in and watch what you're doing, even when I'm talking, even when I'm acting, even when I'm golfing. No matter what it is, I'm also a part of me is going to be an observer of this interaction, an observer of the Spirit. I'm going to be watching for divine moments. I'm going to be watching for teachability in this other person so that I can insert something that's from God. So prayers along those lines for myself that I'm going to be a quality observer, but also prayer for the other person, that God would be working in their heart and their mind and their will, all three. When people come to faith, it really takes all three of those. And when the Lord is doing all of that, and I notice it and step into the process, that's where we see the fruit.
God's already at work. We can join him there if we become a bit more intentional. And getting some great insight today from Rick Matson. By the way, Rick speaks not only at college and university campuses, but churches as well, and he could provide some training perhaps for you or your Sunday school class on how to be more effective in engaging others in spiritual conversations. You can connect with him at rickmatsonoutreach.com. That's rickmatsonoutreach.com, and pick up a copy of his book, Faith is Like Skydiving, and Other Memorable Images for Dialogue with Seekers and Skeptics. Rick is an apologetics specialist with the University Christian Fellowship and is a regular guest with us here in Connecting Faith. Good to see you again, Rick.
Thanks, Neil.
All right, thanks so much for tuning in to Connecting Faith today. If you want to listen to Rick Matson's visit or my earlier conversation with Jonathan McKee, which I really recommend. He's so insightful, and his website offers a lot of great insights as well, so you can check out his website, thesourceforparents.com, the number four, thesourceforparents.com. Of course, you can hear that interview on our website again as well. If you go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page, you can we'll post the interview, and you can listen to it again and pass it on to a friend. Everything's shareable, which is great. We're trying to use social media.
That's right, yeah. I'm making some good use of it there. That's powers right. for good. Also, at our website, the Live Free Challenge is underway here pretty soon, right?
Yeah, it's starting in February, and so it's sign-up time now. Hundreds of people are going to be walking, running, and riding to raise money for rescue and rehabilitation of human trafficking victims. It's a great opportunity, a Live Free Challenge initiative to support the work of International Justice Mission. And you find a link there on our website, or you can go to livefreechallenge.org to learn more, livefreechallenge.org. So I hope as you listen regularly, you'll listen in the weekends. Got some great new programs, including Liz Curtis Higgs with Word by Word and Meredith Foster with Epic. Check that out online as well. You can get details at myfaithradio.com. Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support, and you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.